Greetings and welcome to Florida Government Watch. This is your host, Randy Osborne. And today we'll be talking on a topic that will be on the ballot in November. In fact, early voting is going on currently. And it's medical marijuana. It's Amendment 2. And I'm going to give you just a little bit of information about medical marijuana. And a little bit later, we will be talking to Dr. Karen Ephraim, which is a pediatric doctor, and we'll be discussing the issues in children and adolescents. So let me just kind of give you an overview of this ballot of exactly what this entails. Use of medical marijuana, the ballot title is Use of Medical Marijuana for Debilitating Medical Conditions. And then in a summary, it goes like this. Allows medical use of marijuana for individuals with debilitating medical conditions as determined by a licensed Florida physician. Allows caregivers to assist patients' medical use of marijuana. The Department of Health shall register and regulate centers that produce and distribute marijuana for medical purposes and shall issue identification cards to patients and caregivers. Applies only to Florida law, does not immunize violations of federal law or any medical use, possession, or production of marijuana. This particular amendment has been put on the ballot and will be put on the it's a constitutional amendment, meaning that our legislature, once this is passed, cannot go back and change any part of this. And the interpretation is specifically by the Supreme Court of the state of Florida. The other thing that I want to mention on this is the physicians are not actually giving out prescriptions. Medical marijuana will not be prescribed through pharmacies. The reason for that is there's federal laws that prohibit marijuana from being, in fact, it's a narcotic and it is used, it's actually an illegal drug substance that by federal law is illegal. However, what they have done to circumvent that is a physician has the ability to actually write a note to recommend medical marijuana. And then the patient would actually go to a pot shop, as I would call it, and get their marijuana. The other part of this is the growth of it and how are they going to regulate all that. And apparently that in this amendment, they've given the Department of Health kind of the oversight on how to do that. This particular law or amendment has actually is copied very similar to the California law. And I want to give you a couple statistics on that California law that to me is pretty mind-boggling in actually getting an understanding of what is going on with medical marijuana here in our country, very specifically in California. One of the statistics is 1.1 million people in the state of California. Let me repeat that. That's 1.1 million people in the state of California are actually currently using medical marijuana. Over 50% of the patients that's using medical marijuana are 34 years of age or under. Over 50% are 34 years of age or younger. Some of the number one purpose in the state of California that's used for medical marijuana is low back pain. 26% of the patients are using it for low back pain. And it goes on, in fact, for chronic pain of some sort, whether it's some type of back pain, muscle spasms, et cetera, 58% of patients in the state of California are using this drug for some type of pain. The other point I want to mention or I want to bring out in this discussion on medical marijuana is if you actually read the actual ballot initiative. In fact, I'm looking down through here right now, and I'm going to read the purpose of it. definitions for purpose of this section. Debilitating medical condition means cancer. This is what, it, according to this amendment, it can be used for here in the state of Florida. It means cancer, epilepsy, glaucoma, positive status for human immune deficiency, which is HIV, AIDS, post-traumatic stress sclerosis, Crohn's disease, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, or other debilitating medical conditions. Now, let me repeat that term, or other debilitating medical conditions. So hypothetically, if you were to have, you got constant headaches, you could go and say, hey, I need some marijuana because I have headaches all the time. It'd be a debilitating condition. Also, very similar to the state of California, that's the reason the majority of the people are using this. They're going in and complaining about having lower back pain. What my point is, this particular amendment has nothing to do with a medical condition. It has been shown in time and time again that marijuana, very specifically medical marijuana in California, has absolutely no, it really is not being used for medical purposes. 1.1 million people in the state of California are using marijuana. Coming up, we're going to have again Dr. Karen Ephraim, which is a pediatrician, and she's going to be discussing some of the effects on adolescents and children on medical marijuana. So stay tuned. We're back at Florida Government Watch, and I have on the phone today Dr. Karen Ephraim. And Dr. Ephraim, she's a pediatrician, she's a researcher, and a conference speaker. Dr. Ephraim's medical degree is from Johns Hopkins University, and her pediatric training is the University of Minnesota. She's provided testimony for Congress as well as in-depth analysis of numerous pieces of major federal education, health, and early childhood legislation for congressional staff, state legislators, and many organizations. Dr. Ephraim also serves on the board of the Alliance for Human Research Protection. She is a member of the International Society for Ethical Psychiatry and Psychology. She has spoken at numerous state and national conferences, and she's been interviewed by Fox News, quoted in Wall Street Journal, the British Medical Journal, National Journal, WorldNet Daily, Newsmax, numerous newspaper, radio, television stations across the country. So welcome, Dr. Ephraim.
Thank you very much for having me, Randy.
We're discussing, as you know, a topic on medical marijuana, and we just wanted to get kind of some background and some information of marijuana. But first of all, I just wanted to go back to, in the amendment, that it calls for, that it basically says it's for the treatment of epilepsy, AIDS, and other debilitating illnesses. Can you help me, first of all, let's start with the debilitating illnesses. What exactly does that mean? Can you help define that from a medical perspective?
Well, these kinds of illnesses are chronic, and they are just serious, and they cause long-term pain, discomfort, weight loss, and just take a real toll on people. And some examples are HIV/AIDS, cancer, epilepsy, depending on how serious it is and what kind of medications are used to treat it, because those have side effects, things like that.
Well, one of the things that we were concerned about is, for example, the state of California, a large majority of medical marijuana users. In fact, I believe it's like 26% are using it for lower back pain. And in the state of California, they're defining that as a debilitating illness. I had a friend that went to California, and he was walking through, and people would walk up to him and ask him if he needed a prescription for marijuana. And they basically would coach them into, you know, hey, you know, you've got a back pain, you have a headache. And then they would go and get a letter signed off, and then they would go to a pot shop and get their marijuana. So one of the things that, another thing that it identified was epilepsy. And can you kind of give me just an assessment of what, your opinion is on the effects of epilepsy? Because I hear this a lot. There's a lot of argument about epilepsy and about how effective medical marijuana is. However, I will mention that in California, the number of that is using it for epilepsy in the state of California is less than 1%. So can you kind of give me what your assessment is of medical marijuana and epilepsy?
Well, I looked at the Cochrane Review, which is an internationally known organization that reviews studies on all sorts of medical drugs and procedures for every kind of disease, and they are internationally recognized by many scholars and hospitals and all of this for their neutrality and the thoroughness by which they do their research. And they don't take contributions from pharmaceutical industry, so they're very neutral. And what they said about marijuana for epilepsy is, and I quote, "No reliable conclusions can be drawn at present regarding the efficacy of cannabinoids or marijuana as a treatment for epilepsy. The dose of 200 to 300 milligrams daily of cannabinol use was safely administered to small numbers of patients generally for short periods of time, and so the safety of long-term cannabidiol treatment cannot be reliably assessed." So basically, they don't have enough information because they haven't tested it on enough people, and the effects of the drug are too short-term to be used in a chronic condition like epilepsy. And I did the same review of that organization for glaucoma, and they basically said the same thing, that it works to decrease the pressure in the eye, which is what the disease of glaucoma is, and it's exactly the same sort of thing. It works for a few hours, but you would have to take so much marijuana, either in pill or smoking form, that you would be impaired, you know, mentally and physically from having to take that much marijuana to make it effective in the long term.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Can you, being a pediatrician, can you give me kind of, because one of the things that we are noticing, especially in California and also in Colorado, is teenagers, children are getting hold of this either intentionally or unintentionally through some of the different types of things such as candies, cookies, candies. A lot of the candies are made to look very, very similar to the kind of candies that you'd go to the store, like York Peppermint Patties, Almond Joy, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. A lot of the packaging is very, very similar. And also these are, you know, used in cookies and things of that nature. Can you kind of just give us, I've heard some information about what it does to IQ levels, how it affects the teenage brain, things of that nature. Can you kind of give us a synopsis of that?
Sure. There are a number of problems. First of all, accidental poisoning of young children have no idea that they're getting it, which is causing all sorts of problems for poison control centers and hospitals, especially in Colorado and California. But as far as the long-term effects on the teenage brain, because these states have said that medical marijuana is a good thing and, you know, have made it available, the percentage of teenagers who used to think that marijuana was dangerous has dropped very, very significantly. And that is fueling the efforts of kids to get at it. So that's an attitudinal problem that these laws are having, is that it's making it sound noble, and therefore desirable, or at least thinking that kids don't have to worry about it. And nothing could be further from the truth. So the research that I have seen all seems to say about the same thing, that persistent marijuana use was linked with a decline in IQ, that there's lower academic functioning, less preparedness for school, poorer mental health, and more delinquent behavior. That was from a 2016 study. The CDC did a study of alcohol, marijuana, and other drugs and found that the percentage of U.S. high school students who engaged in using those had a negative effect on the grades that they received in school. The more that they used pot, the more often that they used marijuana, the worse that their grades were. And that was based on a 2009 survey, so a little bit older, but it seems to be consistent. Another major thing is the effect on the brain, and it seems to cause changes in the brain structure related to working memory, which again is a predictor of weak academic performance and impaired everyday functioning, and that students that they studied did poorly on memory-related tasks. And they also found that the younger the student or the teen was when they started using marijuana, the more problems that they had with academics and schoolwork, which sort of speaks not only to the lowered concern about it being dangerous and the use in these candies and cookies with younger children, either intentionally or unintentionally, inhaling it or not inhaling, ingesting it that way.
A couple things that I have from the other side that we've heard time and time and time again, that marijuana has never killed anybody. It's not dangerous. People don't die from marijuana use. Is that true?
They may not have died from direct marijuana overdose. But, you know, acutely, like can happen with cocaine or heroin or some of these other drugs. but they can die from the effects of people having severe reactions to it, psychotic reactions, which are extremely common with marijuana, that can cause them to do horrible things or be impaired in their driving, either just the immediate reaction time or to have hallucinations when they're driving or think that something is happening when it's not, or just all sorts of other really dangerous things. And your excellent booklet has several different incidents of people doing harmful, if not fatal, things from intoxication with marijuana. So to say that no one has ever died from it is certainly not accurate.
I have been around the state speaking on this subject, and every time that I've gone to a meeting, whether it's a church, whether it's a community organization of some sort, I will speak on this issue. And after the meeting, and it has not failed every single time, I will have people come up to me and say that this is an addictive drug. In fact, what they will tell me is they have a loved one or them themselves has been in drug rehabilitation, not for another drug, but very specifically for marijuana. Can you kind of address the addictive nature of this?
Absolutely. And what's really scary is that the younger one is exposed to marijuana, the higher the incidence is of addiction. There was a study that showed that when people started smoking marijuana in adulthood, they were 9% more likely to become addicted. But if they started in their teens, it was almost double, so at 17%, which is really concerning if you're thinking about the future health and safety and well-being of our kids.
I'm not even sure how proponents of this would even suggest that it is not addictive. I'm really not understanding even how they would even suggest that.
No, it's not true at all. And because the teenage brain is still developing and maturing, younger kids are much more prone to the addictive nature of marijuana as well as other drugs. And the reputation that marijuana has as a gateway drug leading to others is also very concerning.
I want to talk just briefly, Dr. Ephraim. We have Dr. Ephraim, Karen Ephraim. She is actually a pediatrician. And we are discussing medical marijuana, and we're actually specifically talking about Amendment 2 and the effects that it could have. Can you explain to me, one of the things that this is not being proposed as a prescription drug. In other words, you don't go to a doctor and he evaluates you, decides that you need marijuana, writes you a prescription, and then you go down to the local pharmacy to get your prescription filled like medications are here in the United States and specifically in Florida. Can you explain to me what they're doing? And it almost appears like they're trying to circumvent the entire medical system into introducing medical marijuana.
It does appear that way, I agree. And what's happening is that people are going to a few doctors who sadly are motivated by profit to get notes for marijuana from for whatever reason, as you mentioned, back pain or glaucoma or headaches or whatever it may be, and they are not going to a pharmacy to get an approved medication that has been studied and a known quantity of the active agent and without contaminants, have no idea how pure and how concentrated the marijuana that they may receive will be. So there can be a huge fluctuation of concentration of the active ingredient, which is THC, that causes the effect of marijuana that people desire. And that can cause, you know, if it's really concentrated and a teenager gets it, they may have dangerous problems with it, like psychosis and hallucinations and all sorts of things. And you also, when you go to a pot shop, you have no idea if the amount of marijuana that you're getting is well studied as far as purity, so you don't know if you're getting all sorts of other dangerous ingredients in mixed in with the pot. And that's a huge concern. But there's such a variation in pot from one place to another, whether it's the THC concentration or the variety of the plant that's used or contaminants, that really people don't know what they're getting. And the doctor that wrote that note can't be responsible, because he doesn't really know what the patient will get. And especially for chronic pain symptoms, it's hard enough to regulate and find the right dose for standard pharmaceuticals, much less something like this. And I just think it's going to cause way more problems than it's going to solve.
So basically what happens is non-medical trained professionals are going to be actually staffing these pot shops. And normally at a
They're not even pharmacists.
Right. Normally at a reputable pharmacy, you have medicine that's handled by a licensed Florida pharmacist who has a doctorate in pharmacy, and if I'm not mistaken, they have a couple of very intensive license examinations, and they have over 2,000 hours of clinical experience. And in a pot shop, there's no medical training at all necessary to be involved in this at all, and that is in itself very alarming.
Right, they can't give people, you know, pharmacists give advice to the people that come to the pharmacy about the nature of the drug and the side effects and what to watch out for and when to call the doctor and all of those things.
Well, Dr. Ephraim, we really appreciate your insight and your input on this issue. This is Amendment 2 that's going to it's actually on the ballot. In fact, there's early voting going on currently, and on November 8th is the final election. That's Amendment 2, and if you vote yes on Amendment 2, you are saying, I want this in our community. I want this in our, quite honestly, it's going to be in our schools. It's going to be in our families. It's going to be across our state if we vote yes on this. If you vote no, you are voting to stop this amendment from getting passed. The other thing I want to mention very quickly, once again, that a constitutional amendment such as this, if there are loopholes within this amendment, the legislature cannot go back and pass regulations and laws on this amendment because this will be on the state constitution. So that's another concern that I have. Again, you need to look at this very carefully. This is going to be one of the worst things that the state of Florida will experience, especially with the state of Florida having a lot of tourism and things of that nature. It's going to cause a major, major problem for our state. Again, thank you, Dr. Karen Ephraim, for coming on and discussing this important issue and giving your expertise on medical marijuana.
Thank you so much for having me, Randy, and I would just agree that, especially for the sake of the children of the state of Florida, this is the last thing that our state should be doing.
Again, thank you. This is Randy Osborne for Florida Government Watch. Until next time, God bless.